Benham versus Ozark Materials River Rock, 175069, and we'll hear from Mr. Wright.
My name is Mr. Will Wright. I'm here on behalf of Ozark Materials, who is the appellant in this matter.
Is there any way you can pull that mic up a little closer? Or there you go.
May it please the court, counsel. The appellant urges that this court reverse the district court's decision in this case on several grounds. Those grounds are outlined in the appellate's brief. One of the important grounds that this court will address is whether or not there is constitutional standing, which is the subject matter jurisdiction of the district court. The district court found that there was standing. The appellant disputes that there is constitutional standing under the Tenth Circuit's case precedent in Ward versus Utah. 10th Circuit 2003, to meet the requirements, a plaintiff must demonstrate that he has suffered an injury in fact, and there is a causal connection between the injury and the conduct complained of.
Why don't we have that here?
Because
from the like to swim and fish and everything, and now he says he's handicapped.
Those were statements. Those were statements and allegations that were made in the complaint. We're of the opinion that statements and allegations in a complaint get you past a motion to dismiss.
Well, you're saying
as
there's
an
no evidence in the record?
In the record of the trial, there is no causal evidence. There is no evidence that, even assuming arguendo, the wetlands were filled in. How do the filling in of those wetlands affect what he complained about?
I don't understand why the causation would be any different from the injury in fact in this context. If Mr. Benham testified that he liked to use Salinas Creek, and that if the court orders a remedy, injunctive relief, remediation of Salinas Creek, then he, a fortiori, would be able to take full utilization, full benefit of a cleaner Salinas Creek.
There was no evidence put on at the trial that the effects of the no fishing, the no swimming, were caused by what it was the alleged activity on Ozark Materials' operating site. None. There wasn't any scientific evidence of a causal connection between the two. So to the extent that the plaintiff argued that he couldn't fish or he couldn't swim, those were just merely statements made by the plaintiffs in his own opinion, but without any causal connection as to the alleged filling of certain wetlands. How did the alleged filling of the certain wetlands degrade his ability to fish or swim? There was no evidence making that connection, other than his own statement.
Well, he keeps saying other than his own statements. Well, those statements came after he took a penalty of perjury. He swore under penalty of perjury, so it was testimony that he gave under oath that he liked to utilize Salinas Creek, and I think it's fair to reasonably infer, would it not be, that if the court were to order Ozark to remedy Salinas Creek, to clean it up, that he would be able to utilize Salinas Creek just as he had in the past.
Well, there was no evidence demonstrating that he was not able to use the creek in the manner that he wanted to use it.
What about the road that was put through there by fill being put in the middle of the stream
that
as it moved forward across from one side to the other?
I understand. That was the subject matter of the 2005 Army Corps cease and desist letter.
Well, now, that was on a different side of the creek. You said it was on the same side, and that's not correct.
No, Your Honor, all on the same side of the creek. The GRDA had property that Ozark Materials was using for his stockpiling of his rock. His mining operation was on the other property that is still part of the mining operation. And the roadway connected the two. The GRDA filed a complaint with the U.S. Army Corps, and the U.S. Army Corps initiated a formal investigation, issued a cease and desist letter in ordered remediation and that he cease and desist from doing any further operation with respect to that particular road. In fact, the evidence that...
Well, the injunctive relief in 2005 you're referring to?
The violation of 2005 was about that road.
Was about, and the injunction that was issued in connection with the 2005 proceeding was in connection with the east side of Humpback Road, correct?
No, right, there was no distinction.
All right, well, let me ask you this, Mr. Wright. Have you made one utterance in your brief? Have you submitted any evidence to suggest that the injunctive relief that was issued in connection with the 2005 proceeding was on anything other than the east side of Humpback Road? Can you refer me to a page in your brief or an exhibit where you've referenced that?
The exhibit would be the letter of March the 2nd, 2005.
And what page of the appendix is that?
That was the defendant's exhibit, originally number 39, but I don't know if that was the trial exhibit number 39.
And
the exhibits changed at trial, I think.
All right, and have you ever argued in your briefing in this case that the 2005 proceeding was in regard to the west side of Humpback Road?
It was in regard to dumping or discharging into, it was unauthorized discharge of material into Saline Creek, which was in fact the road. That was argued in the trial brief.
Well, this isn't a trial court. Okay, have you argued to us, you had the opportunity to file a reply brief, you filed an opening brief, have you ever argued that this 2000, they argued, Mr. Benham's counsel argued specifically to us that the 2005 injunctive relief was in regard to the east side of Humpback Road. Have you ever made a contrary argument to us?
Other than the only evidence that was presented at the trial court was the March 2nd, 2005 U.S. Army Corps cease and desist.
Okay.
And that was their only evidence. So the only evidence in the record as to what that past violation was the March 2nd, 2005 cease and desist letter. And that was presented to the trial court. Additionally, in addition to the past violation and the standing and the causal connection or the lack of evidence thereof, appellant maintains that the items that were identified in the citizen suit notice were not items that we actually went to trial on. I think the district court acknowledged that. I think the citizen suit notice was defective. I think the brief speaks in length with regard to that. There were
In what way was the notice defective?
In which way? The wetlands that were identified in the citizen suit were defective in regards to the expert at trial on behalf of the citizen admitted that none of the wetlands that were in the citizen suit were actually, in fact, jurisdictional wetlands. So if they're not jurisdictional wetlands in the citizen suit notice, then the citizen suit notice is defective. He was given the opportunity to amend the citizen suit notice, but the citizen suit notice was never amended.
The notice said whatever it said. Ozark then hired Intercon and determined in reaction to Mr. Benham's notice, and Intercon then identified all of the wetlands that were jurisdictional waters, right? So didn't the notice accomplish its purpose by alerting Ozark to what it needed to conduct an investigation? It learned that, in fact, all of these are jurisdictional waters that came within the umbrella of the Clean Water Act.
Well, no. The wetland delineation performed after the notice involved wetlands that were not the wetlands that were identified in the notice.
Well, so is it your position that you were unable to identify the lands in issue? from the notice?
The lands?
Yeah, the wetlands in issue.
The wetlands.
You're saying...
Yes, because the wetlands in the notice were not wetlands that were jurisdictional wetlands at the time of the notice, and nor were they jurisdictional wetlands at the time of the commencement of the action. And that's important. Because at the time of the commencement of the action, the citizen has to at least allege that the specific wetlands were in fact jurisdictional wetlands, which they were not jurisdictional wetlands. So to that extent, that the citizen suit notice is defective. There were additional allegations raised later on in the case that the district court rightly and properly dismissed because those items were not also in the citizen suit notice. The remedy of the conservation easement, I believe, was unjust and without merit. Excuse me.
What is our standard of review on with respect to the remediation efforts?
I think with respect to the remediation efforts, that's probably abuse of discretion. But with respect to applying an easement on land and property and titles and creating a cloud on a title that isn't even in a party to the lawsuit is inappropriate and unconstitutional.
You're saying that it is. Whether the Constitution prohibits a district court exercising injunctive relief to remedy the CWA would preclude the imposition of a conservation easement. Which article in the Constitution prohibits that?
The due process.
All right.
Five.
So you're saying that it would constitute a violation of the takings clause?
Yes.
Okay. And in your brief, did you make an argument other than one sentence that it violates the takings clause in your brief?
In my brief, I argued that it was unconstitutional. It was only one sentence in the judge's opinion.
Okay. So your argument, you meaningfully developed that argument by telling us in one sentence that it violates the Constitution, right?
There was nothing in the district court's order that identified the conservation easement as to the nature, the scope, where it was supposed to be, whose land the easement was supposed to be on. The legal title holders to the property weren't even parties to the
well,
case.
Well, let me test that. Judge Dowdell specifically said, did he not, that he's adopting that portion of Mr. Benham's plan that he had submitted after Ozark had presented a deficient plan. And on page 14 of Mr. Benham's plan, he identified in some detail the conservation easement, and even suggested exactly who might be a potential entity to take responsibility under the conservation easement. Judge Dowdell adopted that. So what is it in page 14 of Mr. Benham's plan that failed to provide the sufficient particulars of a conservation easement?
It's an easement. If it's going to be an easement, I posit that the parties who the easement... the title to the land, to whose easement it is going to apply, need to be parties to the case. With regard to the, I'm not disputing.
Why?
I'm not disputing.
Why?
Why?
Yeah, I mean, in other words, let's say
it's a cloud on a title. Whose title?
Okay, you're saying that if they appoint me to a monitor and to take a responsibility, before you shake your head, you might let me just finish my question. So if they appoint Bob Bacharach to monitor the creek and to take responsibility to carry out this conservation easement, you're saying that I have to be brought into the lawsuit and named as a party when it doesn't even come into play until Judge Dowdell has decided in favor of the plaintiff on liability as an imposed injunctive relief? Why in the world would I need to be named as a party?
That's the position of the appellant, Your Honor.
I'm sorry.
With all due respect, that would be the position of the appellant. Finally, with 30 seconds left, appellant urges that the court committed error by not engaging in primary jurisdiction and sending the jurisdictional determination to the Army Corps. that we believe that the primary jurisdiction argument is one of the stronger arguments, that under Williams Pipeline, 10th Circuit, that the court should have referred that issue to the U.S. Army Corps to make a judicial determination or jurisdictional determination of the wetland before the court made its decision. And so, therefore, we believe that the court committed error and that this court should reverse on grounds of primary jurisdiction.
Thank you, Ms. Wright. We'll hear from Ms. Phillips.
May it please the court.
Can you speak up, please?
Certainly. My name is Christina Phillips. I represent the appellee, David Benham. This is a case about a mining operation operating in violation of the law. And not just operating in violation of the law, but intentionally operating in violation of the law, that now seeks to have this court undo the district court's order that would finally force them into compliance with the Clean Water Act. Mr. Benham respectfully requests this court uphold the district court's order for three reasons. First, the district court properly exercised jurisdiction in this case. Second, the district court properly imposed a conservation easement upon Ozark after finding it in violation of the law. And third, because the record shows Mr. Benham's notice letter complied with the law and put Ozark on notice of its alleged violations. Now, before jumping into those arguments, Your Honor, I'd like to point to a specific citation in the record dealing with standing that you were asking Mr. Wright earlier. So at document number 155, pages 169 and 170, Dr. Patterson, who was the only expert in this case, testified that Ozark's illegal operations caused the devastation that Mr. Benham described, such as not being able to use swimming and fishing holes that he had for decades, and it also caused the aquatic resources such as crawdad and fish to diminish in number. The first reason why this court should uphold the district court's order is because the district court properly exercised jurisdiction in this case. Here, Ozark asserts that the court should have somehow equitably abstained from jurisdiction in favor of the Army Corps of Engineers. But that argument really seeks to turn the citizen suit provision on its head. If you take Ozark's argument to its logical conclusion, the district court could have never had jurisdiction in this case because the Army Corps of Engineers issues permits under Section 404. But of course, that's not what Congress intended when it created the citizen suit provision in the first place. It explicitly authorizes citizens to supplement the enforcement authority of regulatory agencies, and it explicitly gave district courts jurisdiction to hear those citizen suits.
Well, what evidence in the record shows that Ozark's actions caused the degradation of Mr. Benham's ability to recreate in this creek?
Sure, and I will go back to document number 155, pages 169 and 170. That's where Dr. Patterson, who was the expert, the only expert in this case, testified that the manner in which Ozark conducted its mining operations, illegally dredging and filling, not having the appropriate berms and buffer zones,
I thought he said that he could not distinguish between what had happened just by nature and anything that Ozark had done.
The Army Corps of Engineers testified something to that effect, but Dr. Patterson certainly did not. He testified unambiguously at trial that Ozark's illegal operations had caused and exacerbated the problems that Mr. Benham observed. Moving to back to the jurisdictional issues, district courts normally look to five factors, the Schwartzman factors, when determining whether to apply the doctrine of primary jurisdiction. And here it's really the second, third, and fourth factors that are the most important. Those factors include whether the defendant could be subject to conflicting orders between the agency and the court, whether the regulatory agency has initiated proceedings, and whether once initiating those proceedings, the regulatory agency is diligently prosecuting an action to enforce compliance. Here, the record shows at document number 155, page 101 and 102, that the Army Corps never conducted a wetlands delineation of this site. The Army Corps further admitted at trial at document number 155, page 104, that it had never made a jurisdictional determination on Ozark site. It has no idea whether or not it has jurisdiction in this case. In fact, all the record shows is that the Army Corps conducted a handful of drive-by inspections, which Dr. Patterson testified would not have been sufficient to observe the illegally placed fill on Ozark's site within the jurisdictional wetlands. Here, there's no danger that Ozark is going to be subject to conflicting orders because the Army Corps of Engineers has failed to initiate proceedings, much less diligently prosecute them. Now, this court reviews a district court's decision to apply the doctrine of primary jurisdiction under an abuse of discretion standard. And Ozark has pointed to no evidence in the record that shows the district court abused its sound discretion here. Ozark makes a similar jurisdictional argument as it relates to its past 2005 notice of violation. And I'd like to just say from the outset that this is a brand new argument on the part of Ozark. It had not raised these particular arguments before at the district court level. And under this court's consistent case law, Mr. Benham urges this court to deem those arguments waived.
When you say these arguments, I'm not 100% sure I know which arguments you're talking about.
Sure. Let me see if I can clarify that, Your Honor. Specifically, Ozark argues that its 2005 notice of violation means that the Army Corps already has jurisdiction in this case. And that's not true. As Ozark admitted at trial, and let me point you to those, supplemental appendix, page 133, and then document number 155, page 76, Ozark admitted that it had previously mined on a different mine site. It had mined on the west side of the bridge. Out of an abundance of caution, even though Mr. Benham believes these arguments to be waived, for purposes of appeal, he included two documents in his appendix, found at supplemental appendix, starting at page 329, that shows this court that the 2005 notice of violation covers the west side of the Pumpback Bridge Road, which is leased by the GRDA. And that document, starting at page 329, is a letter from the GRDA that shows GRDA actually evicted Ozark in part because of its illegal operations. And then at supplemental appendix, page 340, this court will find Ozark's revised permit application, which shows it moving the location of its mine site from the west side of the road to the east side, which is where it is now and which is the subject of Mr. Benham's lawsuit. The second reason, even if this court were to assume, number one, that Ozark had properly preserved this issue on appeal, which it didn't, and even if this court assumes that it's the same piece of property, which it's not, Ozark's argument still fails because the Army Corps of Engineers would have observed this violation in 2005 and not done anything for 13 years because it still exists today. That's evidence that the Army Corps of Engineers wasn't diligently prosecuting enforcement of the Clean Water Act. The prevailing rule on this issue is that as long as a pollutant remains in a jurisdictional wetland, its very presence constitutes a continuing violation of the Clean Water Act. Now, the second reason why this court should uphold the district court's order is because the district court properly imposed a conservation easement in this case. And again, Ozark makes two arguments as it relates to a conservation easement, both of which are new on appeal. So the first one is that Mr. Benham should have included a list of remedies in his notice letter. However, the 40 CFR section 135.3A only requires six elements to be contained within a notice letter, none of which include a list of potential remedies. In fact, it would be rather presumptuous of Mr. Benham to try to guess what a district court might do should it agree with his allegations. The second argument that Ozark makes with regards to the conservation easement has to do with constitutional grounds, due process and a takings, although it doesn't expound upon these arguments in its brief, and so it's a little difficult to understand exactly what its arguments are. For instance, if it was procedural due process, well, Ozark had the opportunity to brief the its alleged unconstitutional nature in a brief before the district court, and it did submit a brief. It just didn't raise these issues.
Well, let me inquire about that. The one argument that I do think that that Ozark has arguably developed is when they argue on page 27 that of their brief that that it was unconstitutionally vague of what Judge Dell ordered with regard to location. There's no legal description. There's no particulars under their argument of the geographic area. There's no specification of duration. And on the latter, I'm really not 100% sure how long this easement is to last. Which did concern me. Now, Judge Dowdell seemed to order monitoring for 5 years, but it was unclear to me whether this easement is to continue in perpetuity or for 5 years, and so I am a little concerned about the vagueness challenge.
That's a great question, Your Honor. And so what the district court did in this case was rely upon the rules and regulations that have been duly promulgated by the Army Corps of Engineers as it relates to restoration plans. And so one of the Army Corps' requirements for mitigation is that you have some sort of long-term site protection instrument. And that site is at 33 CFR section 332.7A. And the Army Corps says that these long-term site protection instruments can take the form of conservation easements. In fact, I want to make sure I get this right. It says, quote, through conservation easements held by entities such as federal, tribal, state, or local resources agencies. And that's exactly what the court did here. They required a long-term site protection.
How long-term was the easement? Was it 5 years or in perpetuity or something different?
It's my understanding that the easement would be in perpetuity.
Where does it say that?
I don't think that the record reflects that, Your Honor.
Doesn't that render it unconstitutionally vague? There's a cloud on the title that could maybe last, you know, until the earth blows up, or it could last 5 years, or it could last 1 year. Isn't that a procedural defect that renders that portion of the remedy unconstitutional?
I don't think so, Your Honor, respectfully, because this is not uncommon when you get a Section 404 permit. In fact, had Ozark complied with the law in the first place, the Army Corps would have required it to obtain this long-term site protection instrument, a conservation easement. And Ozark knew as early as 2011 that a conservation easement was necessary because its own consultant told it that it needed a conservation easement in order to comply with the law. So I don't know that there are any constitutional issues here. This is simply a fact of a mining company operating outside of the law and now resisting any attempt to make them comply.
Well, let's say Ozark sells this tract to me, so I buy it. And now I plan to let my kid play on the ground. Does that mean, since the easement lasts in perpetuity, that I too am subject to this easement?
Certainly, but I think there's a factual distinction there as to the use of the property. So the conservation easement would require Ozark's mining operation to take certain steps and to do this five-year plan to restore the wetlands that it has diminished. It doesn't prohibit you from walking, from fishing, from swimming. Really, the only time it would come into play is if you were another mining operation, and it would require you to follow the law.
But still, I'd be subject to a cloud on my title, right?
As with any Section 404 permit, yes, the conservation easement would require certain things under the Clean Water Act, as the Army Corps has duly promulgated in its rules. The last reason why this court should uphold the district court's order is because Mr. Benham's notice letter complied with the law and put Ozark on notice of the allegations against it.
How specific does it have to be with respect to the location of the issues?
That's a good question. And this court has said in Carr that the court will observe or take the notice letter from the perspective of the alleged violator. So did the alleged violator understand the allegations against it? And here it's clear that Ozark did understand the allegations against it and, in fact, took preliminary remedial efforts before deciding it was just easier to continue violating the law. Ozark hired Intercon to perform a wetlands delineation of its entire mine site, which is what Mr. Benham's notice letter alleges at Appellant's Appendix, page 217, that the entire mine site has been degraded. I see that my time has expired, Your Honor. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Counsel. This matter will be...
Does he have time on his reply? All right. Thank you, Counsel. Well presented. Thank you, Mr. Wright and Ms. Phillips. And this matter will be taken under advisement.